pointing to the video of the embassy attack. See how he's wagging his finger? It's like the pattern to the knocks. We used to send messages to each other through the wall, letting each other know when we could sneak into each other's rooms and talk at night. Hagen and I sat in a dark room full of TV monitors and computers. It was the first time I'd been somewhere other than my holding cell or the interrogation room. Hagen had even brought me a can of Coke and a bag of chips. This was living large. Ha! A couple of weeks ago, my definition of living large was dancing with Julia Gary and going to the Super Bowl with Adam. It's funny how little things can become big things when you've got nothing anymore. So what's the message? Hagen asked me, his face lit up by the glow of the TV screen.
I don't know. I never could figure it out, I said, feeling lame.
That's because you're seeing it, not hearing it. Let's get it audible.
But there's no sound.
A little creativity wouldn't go amiss, I'm thinking, Hagen scolded. He rewound the video, and we watched it again. This time, Hagen knocked on the table as Darius wagged his finger. Anything? He asked.
I shook my head. It wasn't sounding like any of our codes. Maybe I'd been wrong.
No, stop second-guessing yourself.
Not yet, I said.
You say you use these codes at night, through the wall, yes? Close your eyes. Go back to being little and listening for your brother to knock to you through the wall.
I did what he said, pictured myself smaller, younger, waiting in bed to hear the signal from Darius that the coast was clear.
Looking forward to sneaking into his room and watching him act out a new story he'd made up about Rustam with his G.I. Joes.
Hagen knocked, knocked again, knocked again. I was ready to sneak out, to go see Darius, but I suddenly knew I couldn't.
Mom and Dad are coming, I said aloud. That's what that knock means. Mom and Dad are coming.
Brilliant, Hagen said. At first, I thought he was being sarcastic, but he was scribbling notes in a black notebook.
But what's that supposed to mean? Mom and Dad don't have anything to do with this.
No, Hagen said. But put yourself in Darius's army boots for a moment. You're taken prisoner in Afghanistan, forced to train Al-Qaeda soldiers, or at the very least, pretend to look like you are on film, yes? This is good. It's an opportunity for you to get a message to America. Maybe you've heard the militants talking about a strike on a U.S. military installation, or an American embassy. You want to tell us, warn us. You know you can't just say it out loud on camera. They'd never post that to the internet. You have to be sneaky. You have to say it in some way that your captors won't understand. You need a code. And luckily, you already have one. One that you and only one other person in the world understand. That no one else in the world could ever crack. That's the best kind of code. Unbreakable.
But the knocks, they're not like letters or words you can rearrange. It's just, this one means Mom and Dad are coming. This one means the coast is clear. This one means I'm coming to you.
Right, okay. So your vocabulary in this code is limited, but it's all you got for now. So don't take the message literally. Think about what Mom and Dad are coming means, at its very core.
I don't know. Look out? Danger?
Precisely. That's it, in a nutshell. Danger. Right from the start, Darius was warning us. Trouble is coming. And I have to say, he was right.
It made sense. Even if he wasn't able to say what the trouble was, it meant something to just say, look out.
So you send your message as best you can, Hagen said, queuing up another video. And you wait. And you listen. And then, lo and behold, there comes another miracle. They tell you to read a speech directly to the camera. They ask you to talk.
It was the second video, the one where Darius took responsibility for the attack on the U.S. Embassy. Hagen knew right where the Sith Lord reference was, and he moved the slider to the exact minute and second. He'd been listening to me all those times I told them Darius was trying to communicate with me. He'd taken notes, watched the video over and over again, trying to understand, trying to believe me. I was so grateful to him in that moment, I could have hugged him. You know, if that wouldn't have been really weird.
So now you can slip something in, maybe, but you still have to be tricky, Hagen said, his eyes still on the video. Here, You don't have a code, not like the one you used on the wall. But you do have a language you and only one other person share. Again, a language that no one but you and your brother can ever understand, can ever translate. The language of a shared childhood. Rustam in the cave of the Sith Lord. It's brilliant. It's so utterly confusing, so random, so cryptic that it makes no sense. It sounds like the delusional ramblings of a prisoner. Or perhaps someone pretending to be a convert.
Chapter 24. You think he's doing that? I asked, pretending to be on their side.
It's an effective way to survive when there is no other option open to you, Hagen said. If you can make them believe you. And he may think it will make him privy to more insider information he can pass along.
Hagen loaded the next video, the third one. It was another rant from Darius, read from a piece of paper. This one didn't claim responsibility for anything or come on the heels of an attack.
Here, Hagen said, clicking ahead. At the 4:37 mark, another Rustam reference.
Rustam and the Death Eaters, I said. I knew what it was. I'd watched it again and again, trying to understand what Darius was trying to tell me.
A Harry Potter reference, Hagen said smugly. Don't look so surprised. Just because I was born 100 years before you and work for the CIA doesn't mean I live under a rock. I've read each and every one of them, he said. Goblet of Fire being my favorite, of course, but I want to hear your version.
I thought back to the story we had invented. Okay, so Rustam and Siavesh are tracking down this Death Eater, Bellatrix Lestrange.
A devious and dangerous witch, to be sure, Hagen said, taking notes in his black book.
Right. We found out that Lord Voldemort has sent her to capture an old Auror named Reginald Lumpbucket.
Hagen looked up from his notebook. Is that a name I should know?
No, we made it up.
Well, it's a good one, Hagen said. Very English.
Do you think that's the clue? Darius heard them planning something about somebody named Lumpbucket?
No, Hagen said. He motioned again for me to keep going.
So, we track down Lumpbucket to this old house where he's supposed to live. Bellatrix Lestrange is there, too, looking for him, and we fight.
Naturally, said Hagen.
But while we're fighting, we find out from his old house elf that he's not there. Turns out Lumpbucket died a long time ago.
Voldemort is foiled, then, Hagen said.
No, I said. There's still his portrait.
Hagen sat up. His portrait?
Yeah, you know how in the Harry Potter books all the paintings are alive? Lumpbucket's portrait is in a museum, and Bellatrix Lestrange flies off to steal it.
She robs a museum? Hagen asked.
He put down his notebook and swung around to one of the computers. She tries to. We stop her, of course. But I still don't understand it. What Darius means with the story, I mean.
I think I do, Hagen said.
He turned the computer screen toward me. On it was an article from Time magazine with a picture of an American soldier standing next to the charred metal door of a small building.
The National Museum of Iraq has been undergoing extensive renovations since it was damaged during the 2003 Iraq War,
Hagen explained.
While those renovations have been taking place, the museum's remaining antiquities were moved off-site to a hidden location guarded by American forces. Only the United States military knew where those objects were being hidden. Yet 2 weeks ago, armed militants raided the location, stealing a truckload of Mesopotamian artifacts, some of which were more than 5,000 years old.
Darius, I said. Darius might have known the location.
Maybe he was the one to tell them. Maybe not. But I think we can definitely say that he was warning us that a museum was about to be robbed. Look at the date on the article and the date on the video.
They were days apart, and Darius's warning had come first. Why would terrorists want to steal a bunch of old artifacts? I asked.
Money, Hagen said simply. Guns and bombs and trucks cost money, and those artifacts are worth a great deal of it on the international art market. That they liberated cultural artifacts from the control of American soldiers probably didn't hurt either.
Hagen grabbed my shoulder and squeezed it.
This is a terrific breakthrough.
But we're too late. They already stole the stuff. It's probably long gone.
Yes, There's a Marine colonel still in charge of recovery efforts from thefts during the Iraq War. I'll pass along who we think perpetrated the crime to him, see what he and his team can do. But don't you see what this means? We have proof, Cameron, proof. It's a dead cert that your brother is sending us coded messages. He dropped the name of a story about a museum robbery, and 3 days later, museum artifacts were stolen in Iraq. That's proof that we were right, both of us. We were right. I was right. Darius really was trying to talk to me in those videos. I felt awful for ever doubting him. It was me and Darius against the world. No, I realized, not anymore. It was me and Darius and Mickey Hagen against the world. I finally had an ally. Let's keep going, he said. So, Goblet of Fire's your favorite? I said while he called up the next video. Of course, Hagen said. Ireland wins the Quidditch World Cup in that one. Closest we'll ever get to winning the World Cup of anything. Chapter 25. Hagen met me at the door to the video room where my guard now dropped me off every day. Got a new one, Hagen told me. A new video? He steered me toward a chair and hit play. It was Darius again, looking dirtier, more haggard. His beard was fuller now, and he wore a turban on his head. I barely recognized him. It had only been, what, about a month and a half since the very first video? But for Darius, it had been a lifetime. For me, too. We'd been going over the videos for days, piecing together the clues and the events Darius had been referring to. I told Hagen the made-up Rostam stories Darius mentioned, and Hagen used his experience and knowledge of foreign affairs to link them to recent incidents in the Middle East. What Darius meant with some of his references was still a mystery to us, but a new video trumped everything. This was what we'd been waiting for. If Darius dropped a clue in this one and we were able to decipher it, we might be able to stop whatever it was before it happened. Maybe even find a way to rescue Darius. I focused on what Darius was saying. Most of it was the usual ranting about America and the infidels. Then he made another Rostam reference. I almost stood and cheered. Hagen was excited too, I could tell. He hurriedly rewound the video so that we could hear it again. Like Rostam taking on the Joker's smiling goons, we will score a victory for justice, Darius said. Hagen was scribbling in his notebook. Like Rostam taking on the Joker's smiling goons, we will score a victory for justice, he repeated. That one? Seriously? I said. My elation of a moment before was gone, replaced by a feeling of hopelessness. Why? What is it? Hagen asked. What's the story? Well, that's just it, I said. It isn't much of one. Hagen waited, pen hovering over a page in his notebook. I sighed. One day we were playing football in the backyard, one-on-one, just throwing the ball back and forth, and Darius had the idea that the football had a bomb in it. Hagen looked up. A bomb? We pretended that the Joker from Batman had put a nuclear bomb in the football, and that Rostam and Siavash had to score a touchdown with it to defuse it. Hagen looked up at me skeptically. We were kids, I said, for maybe the 100th time since we'd started this. All our games and stories were stupid. Everybody's games and stories were stupid when they were little because you didn't know any better. I'm just telling you what it was.
Right, right, Hagen said. What else, then?
The smiling goons were Joker henchmen he'd used his laughing gas on, like scary clowns with football helmets on. Darius and I, Rostam and Siavash, had to get past them to score.
What else?
That's it. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing to it. We just mashed up playing football with our Rostam adventures. I don't know what good it does us.
We watched the rest of the video to see if Darius gave us any more clues. Right toward the end, he dropped another reference to Rostam. Hagen and I both sat up straight again.
And then, when our work is done and the last heretic is swept from the face of the earth, like Rostam at the world's end, we will go to our final rewards, Darius said solemnly.
Okay, okay, there's lots more to this story, I said, happy to once again be useful.
Rustam and Siavash have to help Optimus Prime steal back the Allspark from Syndrome, the bad guy from The Incredibles.
You've lost me on this one, I'm afraid, Higgins said. We've moved beyond Harry Potter, yes?
Optimus Prime is a Transformer.
Carry on, said Hagen.
So we're fighting one of Syndrome's giant robots, and we're winning when Syndrome implants nanobots in Optimus Prime and turns him against us. So now we have to fight one of our allies.
As you do, Hagen said.
We manage to lock Optimus Prime in truck mode, but the nanobots, they activate Optimus Prime's self-destruct device. If we can't get rid of him, he's going to blow up and take out half of Phoenix. So Rustam jumps on board him and...
Oh. Oh, no. No, 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 I thought.
And what?
And he drives him over a cliff at the world's end.
Optimus Prime hits the bottom and explodes. Rustam dies to save the city.
Hagen gave me a dubious look.
But he lives, right? He's your hero. Heroes never die in the storybooks.
No, I said. No, Rustam really dies. The whole next story is about Siavash tracking down Syndrome to avenge his death. It turns out Syndrome's nanobots can rebuild Optimus Prime and Rustam, and they're brought back to life.
So there you go, Hagen said.
But Mr. Hagen, there aren't really nanobots that can bring you back to life.
Hagen knew that, of course. What he hadn't considered was what the story might actually mean. Not until that moment. He hadn't thought what I had, that Darius was telling us he was going to sacrifice himself. That Darius was going to die. Chapter 26. The only sound in the room for a few minutes was the low hum of the computers and televisions. Hagen leaned back in his chair.
All right, let's take them one at a time. As for the first story, I have to say it's not much to go on. But let's see what we can do. All the other clues we've figured out have been about events in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, Turkey, Saudi Arabia. Clearly, that region is their base of operations. It's still a big area, but it gives us a place to start.
Not a lot of people playing football over there, I said.
I don't think we should be focusing on the football angle, Hagen said. There's another part of that story that, as a CIA counterterrorism analyst, I find highly interesting.
The nuclear bomb, I said.
The nuclear bomb, Hagen agreed.
There are only 9 countries in the nuclear club right now. The US, the UK, China, France, Russia, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and Israel. Israel won't say if they have nukes or not, but we know they do, so they count. Just don't tell anybody. State secret.
I wouldn't, I stammered.
Israel's for sure not going to give them one of theirs, Hagen went on. So the most likely place for our terrorists to get one is Pakistan, which shares a 1,500-mile border with Afghanistan, most of which is barren, unpatrolled desert and mountains. Easy to sneak across is what I'm trying to say there. And Pakistan is where Al-Qaeda's leaders go to ground when the drones start buzzing too close to home. It's their bunker away from bunker, if you will.
So what, you think Darius might be telling us somebody's moving a bomb?
It's possible. American football is all about moving the ball forward, gaining territory.
Something had clicked for Hagen. I could hear it in his voice, see it in his face. He swung around to a computer to look something up.
But what about the other story? The one about Optimus Prime and the nanobots? Does it mean what I think it means?
Hagen found whatever it was he was looking for and leaned back again.
I think it might mean everything we think it means, even a game of football.
I didn't understand.
It came to me when I said American football, Hagen told me. Your brother, he mentions a story about football and a bomb. You think it's one thing, I think it's another.
But what if it's both?
There happens to be a slightly massive football tournament about to happen next summer in Canada. The Women's World Cup.
What? You mean soccer?
Yes. Well, the rest of the world calls it football, and your brother would know that, being the international traveler he is now. Have you any stories about soccer?
No, I told him. None that I can think of.
Hagen nodded. so he would have had to use your version of football to send his warning. In this World Cup, you have a target truly worthy of jihad. Infidel women running about outdoors without veils, showing indecent amounts of skin, to a radical Islamist at least. And what better place to attack? Close enough to the United States to make a point, but not so close as to necessitate actually sneaking a bomb across America's borders. He turned the screen toward me, showing me Women's World Cup schedules and tables. And your United States team is all set to play Australia in the first round.
You think they're going to set off a bomb at the Women's World Cup in Canada?
I do, said Hagen. And I'm sorry, Cameron, but I think the other story means Darius is going to be the one to wear it.
Chapter 27. Mickey Hagen swept a hand over a pizza box and a 2 liter of soda.
I come bearing gifts, he said.
Pizza? I'd existed on nothing but cafeteria food and cartons of milk delivered to me on metal trays for as long as I'd been here. Just the sight of a pizza delivery box, and I was practically drooling already. My guard left me in the video room with Hagen and went to stand outside.
What's the occasion? I asked.
Hagen looked a little embarrassed.
Well, it's Christmas, he said.
I sat down in one of the chairs. Christmas? It had been November when all this started, and now it was Christmas. If this had been any other year, I'd be home with my parents right now, opening presents, watching basketball, trying to get through to Darius on Skype. I suddenly pictured our house, cold, dark, empty, no Christmas tree, no food cooking in the kitchen, no music playing, no friends and family. Where were my parents? How long would it be until we finally got out of here?
I didn't know if you celebrated Christmas or not, Hagen said.
Yeah, we do, I told him. I sighed. I miss my parents.
I know, son. I'm sorry. It's not my call.
I nodded. I felt like Mickey Hagen was the only person in this whole building who cared anything about me.
At the very least, your efforts in helping us decipher those messages in Darius's communications deserve some reward, Hagen added.
He flipped open the box, revealing a large, thin-crust cheese pizza. Right then, it was the most delicious-looking pizza I'd ever seen. He gestured at the pie, and I dug in.
Not good enough to get me out of here?
I asked, between a mouthful of pizza and a swig from the 2 liter.
I'm afraid not, Hagen said. If anything, it's proven they were right to bring you here.
I stopped chewing. Seriously? I thought cooperating would help get me out of here.
It will, Hagen said, eventually. And more importantly, it will save lives, possibly even your brother's.
So they're doing something about it? The Women's World Cup?
The proper authorities have been notified. Security will be doubled. A special team is being sent to look for the bomb. I can't go into too many details, of course, but rest assured, measures are being taken.
And Darius? I said, sipping again from the 2 liter. What will happen to him? Hagen took a slice of pizza for himself.
It's hard to say, isn't it? A lot of that will depend on what Darius does, if and when they catch up to him.
Oh, wait, Hagen said. I've got some kitchen paper here somewhere. While his back was turned, I quickly closed the lid on the pizza to look at the restaurant flyer taped there. Underneath, a picture of George Washington in sunglasses, it said, We the Pizza. The address was 1776 51st Street, Northwest. No city. Weird name for a pizza place. I'd never heard of it. Definitely not an Arizona chain. Colorado, maybe? California? The area code was 202. I didn't know that one either. Hagen turned back with paper towels, and I flipped the box open again.
There we are, Hagen said, handing me a napkin. Now your mother can't complain when you see her again.
Ha ha. We both knew Mom and Dad and I had plenty to complain about, and not using napkins was about 1,976,242nd on the list. So now what? I asked. I'd been brought to the video room, but we'd already figured out everything we could from Darius's messages.
DHS wants us to go back over to tapes, Hagen said. Look for anything else Darius might be trying to tell us.
I sagged. But we've been over those videos dozens of times, I told him. What else is there to learn? We've listened to them over and over and over again.
Higgins sat up. You're right. He wheeled his chair over to the computer monitors and called up the Al-Qaeda training video again. I groaned.
No, wait, he said. He put the video on one of the big screens, dimmed the lights in the room, and hit play. But this time, he muted the monitor. What are you doing?
You're right. We have listened to these videos ad nauseam. Now, let's watch them.
Chapter 28. I wheeled my chair over, bringing the pizza and soda with me. It was strange, sitting in the dark with my feet up on the desk, eating pizza and drinking soda, and watching Darius put Al-Qaeda militants through their paces like I was at home on a Saturday night watching a DVD with Adam. Adam. He'd be at home with his family today, opening presents. We always called each other later in the day, told each other what we'd gotten. I might even have walked over to his house that night to play our new video games. Forget Adam, I told myself. He's certainly forgotten you. I watched as Darius silently called out commands to the troops, tapping his leg. We'd already figured out that code. More danger coming. I slid my focus from Darius to the men he was training, to the guns they carried, to the obstacles they jumped and ducked and rolled behind. The camera was jerky, like it was being held in somebody's hand. It moved around the small patch of desert, capturing Darius's training session from all angles.
Wait.
Stop, I said. Hagen practically fell over himself getting to the mouse to stop the video, his wheeled chair carrying him backward as he lunged forward.
What? Did you see something?
He asked.
Rewind it.
There, I said.
That mountain silhouetted in the background. I know it.
Hagen looked at me skeptically.
You can't. This is Afghanistan, maybe Pakistan.
No, I'm sure I've seen that mountain before.
I'd seen it a few times, I was sure. Not recently, but I'd thought about it recently.
When?
Then I had it. When I'd been remembering playing Rustam and Siavash with Darius in the desert, me and Darius looking down through scraggly bushes at a dry riverbed, the orange sun setting over that same mountain in the background.
Superstition Mountain, I said. That's Superstition Mountain, outside Phoenix.
Cameron, Hagen said.
No, I know it is. And look, there, that plant. That's desert sand verbena. Raksh likes to eat it.
Are we talking now about the stories you and Darius used to make up, or the real world, Cameron?
I mean the real Raksh, one of the horses at the ranch where my mom works. She named him Raksh after Rustam's horse. I used to go riding those trails in the Tonto National Forest all the time, all around Superstition Mountain. Raksh and the other horses love to eat that stuff, and I'm pretty sure the Sonaran Desert is the only place it grows. At least I think that's one of the plants native to Arizona. We had to learn all that stuff in fourth grade.
Hagen squinted at the screen.
It's hard to tell what it is, he said. As for that mountain, that could be any mountain anywhere. You can barely see it.
Mr. Hagen, you gotta believe me. Darius is right here in Arizona.
Hagen put up his hands.
Hold your horses, cowboy. First, let me run this by the CIA's geologists and botanists, see what they have to say about it.
You've got geologists and botanists?
Naturally, Hagen said. I couldn't tell if he meant that as a pun. I think he did. We'll see what the rock and plant folks have to say about it at the very least. We shall leave no stone unturned, as it were. But Cameron, I'm telling you right now, Darius isn't in Arizona, no matter how much you'd like him to be. He's in Afghanistan. That's where he was captured. That's where the broadcast came from.
But if the attack is going to be in Canada,
then they would have smuggled him into Canada by way of a seaplane from Greenland. They would never risk bringing him to America just to smuggle him across the border into Canada. Cameron, believe me. When you watch one of these things again and again and again, looking for the tiniest of little clues, it's been my experience that you tend to find them, whether they're really there or not.
I sagged again, but
I tried to tell them, Hagen said.
told them we'd got all the blood we could from this stone. But did they listen to Mickey Hagen? No, not anymore.
I sighed. I was so sure it was Superstition Mountain in that video. But now that he'd said all that, pointed out how far-fetched it was, I realized it was probably wishful thinking. The silhouette of the mountain in the video was small, cut off, blurry, and the scrub grass was just as hard to see. It could be anything, really. I was trying to put Darius somewhere else, somewhere away from all the real trouble, somewhere closer to home. Darius and I hadn't gone riding out there in a long time, but he'd have to have recognized he was in Arizona if that's where he really was, wouldn't he? No, I was sure. I'd seen the mountain in the background. It was Superstition Mountain.
It doesn't make sense. I know, I told Hagen. Why would terrorists kidnap Darius in Afghanistan, then bring him all the way back here through all that security, only to take him north into Canada for a suicide attack on the Women's World Cup?
Hagen's eyes slid to the TV monitor.
They wouldn't, of course, Hagen said, his thoughts elsewhere.
But they did, I said. I don't know why, Mr. Hagen, but they did. Darius is in Arizona.
Chapter 29. New Year's came and went. I marked it in the calendar I'd begun keeping in my head, but for me, there were no parties, of course, no bowl games to watch. I didn't worry too much about it. All I could think about was Darius in Arizona. When I wasn't in the video room trying to convince Mickey Hagen, I was pacing my cell, comparing my memories to that video. I was sure now. Darius was in Arizona. It didn't make any sense, but I knew it was true. But if I knew it, why didn't Darius? And if he knew it too, why didn't he say anything? Was he counting on me noticing, just like I noticed his hand signals and the Rustam clues? I almost didn't catch those. Wouldn't have if I hadn't gone over every second of those videos. If Darius knew he was in Arizona, he would have said something, dropped some clue, which meant he didn't know. Or he did, and he was deliberately hiding the fact from us. That thought hit me like a 16-ton weight. I'd been so sure Darius was an innocent victim in all this. Then the CIA and Homeland Security had convinced me he might be what everybody else thought he was. Then Mickey Hagen talked me down from the ledge. But what if Darius really was messing with us? What if the clues he was feeding us were deliberate fakes? What if he knew he was in Arizona all along and was dropping these clues to throw me off the scent, knowing I would be the one person in the world who would do anything I could to find him? I sat down on my bed and put my head in my hands. I didn't know what to think anymore. The only thing I was sure about was that the mountain in the background was Superstition Mountain and that Darius was in Arizona. The rest of it made me sick. All this second guessing would have made Coach Reynolds' head spin. There was a knock at the door and Mickey Hagen came in. He didn't bring a chair and he didn't look happy.
The geologists have been over the videos, Cameron. They say that mountain in the background could be any of a dozen in Afghanistan's Chagai Hills, let alone the rest of the world.
But,
Hagen held up a hand.
I know, you're sure. But these people, they're experts. They've been over every inch of that terrain on their computers.
I've been over it on horseback, I told him. What about the verbena?
Too blurry to tell, Cameron, but most likely another variety of verbena that does grow in Afghanistan. I'm sorry.
I stood and paced again. They're wrong. He's here, Mr. Hagen. I know it.
Well, I asked for a reconnaissance plane to take pictures of the area around your mountain, just to be sure.
And
they didn't see anything unusual, Cameron. Just hikers and riders and forest rangers. And desert. Lots and lots of desert.
But there are caves up in those mountains, I argued. They could be hiding out anywhere up in there, and no one would ever know. One flyover might not catch them.
Cameron. I kicked the bed against the wall. It made enough racket that the guard outside came in, his hand on the pistol at his side.
We're all right, Hagen told him. Just letting off a bit of steam.
The guard wasn't so sure everything was all right, but Hagen outranked him. The guard scowled, backed outside, and closed the door again.
Now there's no reason to go giving out, son, Hagen said.
That won't do anybody any good. Most of all, you.
Makes me feel better, I grumbled.
Well, that it might. But I'm only after what's best for you. I hope you know that. And what's best for you right now is to keep a lid on that temper of yours, all right?
It just sucks so much to know I'm right and have no one listen to me.
I'm listening, Hagen said. But the DHS, they have their answer. And the answer is Afghanistan, and they know it for a fact.
This was new.
How? I asked. The plot we uncovered, the one Darius told us about with your delightful ticking time bomb football story, it's been foiled.
Chapter 30. At 21:52 local time, a Navy SEAL team raided a building in a village outside Zargun Shahr, near the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, Hagen said. They intercepted a small team of highly trained terrorists with the blueprints for Investors Group Field in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, the location of the United States women's team's first World Cup match, and enough explosives to flatten it.
Nuclear?
I asked. No, mercifully, Hagen said. But the rest of the intel was good, Cameron. Very good. You saved a lot of lives today.
Did anybody die in the raid?
7 militants, 2 Navy SEALs, Hagen said quietly.
And Darius? I asked. I almost didn't want to know. Was he caught?
He wasn't there, Hagen said. Nader was the man we think is behind all this business, an Iraqi terrorist named Haidar Ansari.
So there you go, I said. This Ansari guy and Darius, they weren't there because they're here, in America.
Cameron, even if they were able to smuggle Darius back into the country, there's no way Ansari is here with him. He's on every international watch list from here to Australia. He's infamous. He would never leave the Middle East. It would be too dangerous for him, and he's too much a coward.
Then just Darius is here, I said. Please, Mr. Hagen, I'm begging you, something else is going on.
Hagen shook his head, but I could tell he had doubts, that he was second-guessing himself as much as I had been.
What does your gut tell you? I asked him.
My gut tells me I missed dinner.
I wanted to kick my bed again, but I didn't. Instead, I turned my back on Hagen and walked as far away from him as I could in the little room.
Cameron, he said apologetically. Cameron, let's say I do believe you.
Then, I started, but Hagen cut me off.
Let's say I do believe you, Cameron. It's not about my gut this time, or yours. My gut told me you were right about the code, and you were. That was the clue we needed. We averted a terrible thing, and that's a fact. But this business about Arizona, I've done all I can.
Have you? I challenged him. Have you really?
Yes, Hagen said coolly.
Have you gone to the media?
Cameron, that's not how we do things here.
Have you contacted the forest rangers then?
No, Cameron.
Send in a SEAL team?
Send an elite spec ops force into a national forest outside Phoenix? Hagen said. Cameron, be serious.
How far up the chain have you taken this? To your boss? What about your boss's boss? Or his boss? The national security director or whatever?
Cameron.
You're not trying! I yelled at him.
I've tried all I can, Hagen shot back. I'm not the one you want for an ally here, Cameron. You've got the wrong man. This code of yours, this intelligence, the raid, this was a win, a big win. Just getting them to listen to me was a victory in and of itself. A victory that won me points at this agency, and that's a fact. Points I could maybe spend pushing this Arizona angle, but no matter how many shillings I have in the bank, no matter how hard I push, there's always going to be a wall I can't knock over. No win is ever going to wipe my slate entirely clean. I'm always going to be the ignoramus who second-guesses himself so much he can't write an intelligence brief without contradicting himself, who isn't good for anything more than sitting in on the interview of a high school student. I'm always going to be the damn fool who didn't know his own bloody brother was a terrorist 30 years ago. That's who I am, he said, finally calming down. That's all anyone will ever remember.
It's all anyone will ever remember if you let it be, I told him.
I'm sorry, Cameron. I've done all I can.
Hagen said, and he left me alone.
Chapter 31. Mickey Hagen didn't come for me the next day, or the next. Neither did Special Agent Tomaszewski or any of the other interrogators. The only person I saw for the next week was my guard when he brought my meals. I paced my cell like a caged lion. I banged on the door and asked for Hagen. I left my food untouched on its metal trays. How could Hagen just roll over like that? How could he not do everything he could to convince them of the truth? He knew there was something wrong. I could see it in his eyes, hear it in his voice. That day I'd realized the video was filmed in Arizona, I'd said it didn't make any sense, and he'd agreed with me. They wouldn't have brought Darius all the way to America, snuck him across the border, and hidden him away in the Tonto National Forest just so they could turn around a few months later and make him carry a suicide bomb into the Women's World Cup in Canada. Hagen and I both knew that was stupid. But Darius was in America. I was sure of it, which meant only one thing. The terrorists were planning on using Darius in a strike here, in America, and soon. Hagen knew it too. If one was true, Darius was in America. The other was true. Darius would soon be used against an American target. So why hadn't Hagen done everything he could to convince them of the truth? I kicked my bed. My guard was so used to it by now that he didn't bother to put in an appearance, and I kicked it again just for him. Frickin' Mickey Hagen. After all we'd been through, I thought he was on my side, do or die. But I saw now it was all just a trick. I thought he'd been my friend, just like I'd thought Adam and Julia and all the rest were my friends. But they weren't, not deep down. They were friendly enough when it didn't matter, but when push came to shove, they abandoned ship, every last one of them. Even Mickey Hagen. It had all been a trick. That story about his brother, all that camaraderie, the pizza and sodas, it was all to get me to open up, to pump me for information. The story about his brother was probably just made up, I realized, a way in and a way out. It was all spy tricks, all those people who'd interrogated me, that hard-looking lady who convinced me Darius was a terrorist. They were the bad cops, like on TV. Hagen was the good cop. He came in afterward and told me I was right, told me he believed in me just to get my help, just to get the good intel. And then when he got what he wanted, he dumped me faster than Julia Gary. I kicked the bed again, and my food tray skittered across the floor. I didn't care. I knew the truth now. I was all alone in this, in everything. All alone except for Darius, trapped in some cave somewhere in Arizona. Maybe. I thought. No. No doubts. No second guesses. I remembered our code of honor, the one that lady had thrown in my face like it was the reason Darius had turned traitor. Be loyal. I knew who I was loyal to. Darius. Darius was innocent. He was being held in Arizona by terrorists and didn't know where he was. Never give up. If Mickey Hagen couldn't believe that, wouldn't believe it, I would. I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't let go of the truth. But what was I going to do with the truth? Mickey Hagen had been my ally, my voice at the CIA. When I'd stuck to my guns about the code in the videos, he'd been the one to convince his superiors I was right. I was sure that Darius was being held prisoner in Arizona, that he was going to die in a very real, soon-to-happen suicide attack right here in America. Darius was going to die, and who knew how many more people with him? He was going to die, and everybody was going to think he really was a terrorist. But here I was, helpless, trapped in this cell, a prisoner of the United States government, the very country I wanted to help defend. I had to do something. But what, Cameron? I asked myself. The answer came to me with perfect clarity. I had to escape. Chapter 32. It was crazy, stupid, impossible. Escape from a U.S. government facility? Me? But I had to try. Darius was my brother. I had to do everything I could to help him. Or die trying. I nodded like I'd been talking to myself,
like I'd been having an argument and had finally been convinced. I had to break out of here and get to Arizona, find Darius in the mountains outside Phoenix. And then what, genius? And then tell the authorities. Take them there. They'd arrest me, put me back in a cell, but it wouldn't matter. I'd tell them right where Darius was, exactly how to find him and this Ansari guy or whichever terrorists were with him. Even if the authorities didn't believe me, they'd come for me, wherever I told them I was, and then they'd see. They'd see there really were terrorists right here in America, right in the mountains outside Phoenix. I was starting to sound a little crazy, even to myself, but I had no other choice. Mickey Hagen had abandoned me, given up, crawled back into his hole of regret and self-doubt, but not me. I wasn't going in there with him. I was ready to get out of my hole. I heard murmuring outside my door. I quickly put my ear to it and listened. My guard was talking to somebody with a big, deep voice. Not Hagen, somebody new. I had no idea what it was about, but I heard the jangle of keys. The guard was going to open my door. My eyes roamed the room half crazily, searching for something to use as a weapon. I looked up at the camera in the corner. I can't imagine how I looked in that moment, my back to the door, eyes bulging out of their sockets, unshaven, unbathed, like some cartoon madman. They'd see me. Whatever I did, they'd know. But I had to get out of here, get back to Arizona, find Darius, stop the terrorist plot. The metal food tray. My eyes locked onto it, and I snatched it up like it was a fumbled football. I hefted it in my hands, taking the weight of it. Not too heavy, but when swung at a face, the guard's keys jangled in the lock, and I flattened myself against the wall, ready to strike. Chapter 33. This was it. My only chance to escape. My only chance to find my brother. To save Darius. I had to. I was the only one who could do it. My breath came short and quick, and a bead of sweat rolled down the hollow of my back. No. Relax, I told myself. Breathe. Do like you do when you're standing behind the quarterback, waiting for the snap, waiting for a hole to open up to run through. I closed my eyes, took a deep breath. I embraced the anticipation, the adrenaline. Let them fill my head like white noise. Let them push out everything else but my goal. No distractions. No doubts. No second guesses. On the football field, there was nothing but me and the defense. And here, now, there was nothing but me and that guard. Me, the guard, and the metal tray I was going to brain him with. The door opened. The lights flickered on. A burly, broad-shouldered African-American soldier stepped inside.
Cameron Smith? The soldier said. I'm here to transfer you to another.
I swung the metal tray like a club, aiming right for his face. They met with a jarring clang, and the soldier went straight down like he'd been clipped in the back of the legs.
What was that?
The guard in the hall said. He was drawing his gun as he came into my cell. I put my shoulder into the door like I was hitting a tackle dummy, slamming the soldier between the door and the frame. He dropped his gun and staggered, but he didn't go down. I hit him with the door again and again. He finally fell on top of the first guard, unconscious. I was panting. I glanced up at the camera again, sure my attack had been witnessed. I waited for the yells, the alarms, but all I could hear was my own heartbeat thundering in my ears. I took a step toward the door, and my legs almost gave out, like I'd just run 100 wind sprints. But I didn't have time to collapse. I didn't have time to calm down. If I wanted to save Darius, I had to get out of here. Now. I peeked out into the hall. Empty. The second guard was still lying half in, half out of the door, and I dragged him inside by the arms. I stood over the two men, looking down at their unconscious faces. Oh my God, what was I doing? What had I become? A couple months ago, my life had been high school, football practice, Julia, Adam, West Point applications. It all seemed so insignificant now, so far away. But as insignificant as it was, if I walked out that door now, if I ran, it was all gone for good. Football and college and girls and all the rest of it. If I ran out that door, there was no going back. Not ever. I pushed the fear down deep. No distractions, no doubts, no second guesses. I took the first guard's gun from his holster, locked the soldiers in my cell, and ran. Chapter 34. I was two corridors away from my cell when the alarm went off. It wasn't loud, not like a house alarm meant to scare away crooks. It was more like a persistent low beep. Beep, 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 beep. In a way, it was more ominous than a blaring alarm. It was like the little flashing red light up near the ceiling every few feet was saying, "I just wanted to let you know, Cameron Smith escaped from his cell. But we're not too worried about it. We know we're going to catch him. Carry on." Beep, 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 beep. There were doors all down the hall, closed doors without windows in them, and each marked only by white numbers on little black plastic squares. Were these more cells? Were my parents behind one of these doors? Some other prisoners? That's what we were. Me and my parents and anyone else being held here. We weren't guests. We were prisoners of the United States government. Whatever was behind those doors, I was in perpetual fear that one of them would open and someone would step out and grab me, or worse, make me use the gun. The gun. I looked down at the gun I'd taken from the guard. It was cold and black, with more buttons and switches on it than I thought guns had. Could I really shoot someone with it if I had to? Would I? There was a turn up ahead, another corridor. An emergency exit sign pointed left, the way out. That's what I wanted. I had to get outside the building and run, run all the way back to Arizona from wherever it was they had taken me, New Mexico or Colorado or California or wherever, and find Darius before it was too late. For him and for whoever it was he was supposed to kill. I slinked down the hallway. I was almost to the end when a radio squawked around the corner. I was just about to run into a guard. I grabbed the handle of the first door I found and tried it. Locked. I lunged for the door across the hall. It opened. The lights flickered on automatically as I threw myself inside. I was in a little office break room. Refrigerator, cabinets, coffee maker, microwave table, two chairs, trash can, soda machine. The smell of burned coffee and liquid cleaner. A door opened and closed nearby. They were searching the rooms. In a panic, I looked for any place I could hide. The cabinets were all filled with shelves and packed with random mugs and paper plates and half-empty boxes of coffee filters. The trash can was too small to fit inside, the table too tiny to hide under. Idiotically, I threw open the door to the refrigerator, thinking I could hide in there. I couldn't, of course. I'd have to dump all the soda cans and plastic tubs full of moldy old lasagna and half-eaten cans of soup in the trash and find some place to hide the glass shelves. And then, you know, probably suffocate. I spun around, trying to think what to do, where to go. I still had the gun. I could hide behind the trash can, wait for whoever it was to come inside and shoot them, run past their dead body and out the exit and disappear. I stared at the gun in my hand. It was heavy. Heavier than I thought a gun would weigh, a lot heavier than all the water pistols I'd played with as a kid. Too heavy. I couldn't do it. I couldn't shoot an American soldier in cold blood, even if they were coming to take me back to my cell, even if I was never going to see daylight again. Not even for Darius. Another door closed, footsteps close by, the squawk of a radio. I was busted. And then an idea came to me. A memory, really, of another time there had been alarms and chaos and panic. A crazy, stupid idea that would have been funny if I hadn't been freaking out. I opened the refrigerator and grabbed the half-empty soup can. At my 16th birthday party, Adam had put a can of soup in the microwave without knowing any better and almost burned my house down. I hurried over to the microwave and tried to shove the can inside, but there was a spoon sticking out the top and it wouldn't fit. I took the spoon out and almost tossed it in the sink before I realized it was better in the microwave. More metal, more sparks. I tossed it in with the can and yanked open drawers, stuffing more silverware into the microwave. When it was full, I slammed the door closed and punched the button for popcorn. Vroom. The microwave lit up and started humming, the can and all the silverware rotating inside. I could already hear the metal popping and crackling as I ducked behind the trash can. The door opened.
A soldier in fatigues stepped inside, his gun held out in front of him in both hands. His eyes went straight to the sound of the microwave the moment it burst into flames. The soldier recoiled. The sprinklers in the room came on, suddenly dousing everything with rain. The fire burned on, the microwave still bouncing crazily off all that metal. Another alarm, shrill and far louder this time, pierced the air. The soldier lunged for the fire extinguisher on the other side of the room. I burst from where I was crouching behind the trash can and ran, out into the hall, around the corner. A glowing green exit sign above a door beckoned, promising escape. I didn't look back to see if the soldier was following me. I banged through the door, expecting to see a starlit field, a parking lot, a road. But I wasn't outside at all. I was still inside. I was in a stairwell with simple concrete stairs going up and down. The door clicked shut behind me, muffling the sound of the alarms, and I saw the words painted on it. Sublevel 22. I had 22 flights of stairs to climb just to reach the ground floor. Chapter 35. The door had barely clicked shut behind me before I was running up the stairs, taking them two at a time. 22 flights. All this time, I'd been 22 levels underground. I'd had no idea. I was huffing by sublevel 17, but I had to run. They had to know I'd made the stairwell. I'd set a microwave on fire just outside the exit door. Any second now, somebody would... I heard a door burst open in the stairwell, heard boots on stairs, coming fast. But from which direction? The sound echoed up and down the stairwell. If they were coming up, I might be able to beat them to the ground floor. Might. If they were coming down, they'd catch me for sure. And there was nowhere to hide in here. It was just level after level of stairs and doors. There was only one thing to do. I had to get out of the stairwell. I tried the door at sublevel 15. Locked. A digital keypad beside the door was the only way in. I ran up the next set of stairs to sublevel 14. It was locked too, with another keypad beside it. I stopped, breathing hard, and made myself think. Had all the doors been like this? Yeah, I could see them. Little keypads just like this one outside every door. If every one of those doors had one, sublevel 13 would too, and 12, and 11, and 10, and 9. If I wanted out of this stairwell, I had to get through one of these locked doors. Boots thundered. Another door opened and closed. More soldiers. I had to move. But I didn't know the code. I punched in four random numbers on the keypad. A little red light came on. I tried another four. Another red light. The footsteps were getting closer. Come on, come on, come on, I told myself. Think. What's the code? This was sublevel 14. I tried 1414. Red light. 4141. Red light. 1234. Red light. 4321. Red light. In frustration, I mashed all the buttons with my fist. The keypad hesitated for a second, and I held my breath. The red light came on. I cursed. The soldiers were almost on top of me. Wait, I still had the gun. I still wasn't going to shoot any soldiers. I wasn't even going to pretend to. But I could shoot the keypad. The soldiers would hear it, and they'd see what floor I was on from the bullet hole. But if it worked, if the door opened, I'd at least be out of the stairwell. I aimed the gun at the keypad, turned my head away, slowly squeezed the trigger, waiting for the bang. The door made a chunking sound, and a green light blinked on the keypad. The door had unlocked, but I hadn't even fired the gun. What'd I do, scare the keypad into opening? I didn't have time to figure it out. I twisted the handle, pulled the door open, and slipped inside, gun at the ready. Chapter 36. Brown and red pattern carpet, gray cubicles, fluorescent lights, a water cooler, a mail cart, the soft click of fingers typing on computer keyboards. Suddenly, I wasn't in a secret U.S. government detention facility. I was in an office building. A U.S. government office building, I was sure, but not another floor full of locked doors and interrogation rooms. I heard footsteps behind me, boots running in the stairwell, and I backed away from the door. The nearest cubicle was empty, and I slipped inside and hid under the desk. I waited for the door to fly open, for dozens of soldiers and security officers to come pouring through and catch me, but nothing happened. The door didn't open. No soldiers came charging through. Of course, they wouldn't have expected me to be able to get past the keypad security. They didn't know I'd come through onto this floor. They had run on by, still expecting to find me somewhere in the stairwell. I had time to catch my breath, but not too much time. Pretty soon now, they'd figure out that I had to have made it through one of those doors, and they'd trip the alarm, start searching all the other floors. The alarm? I listened. There wasn't an alarm going off on this floor, and you couldn't hear the alarm from downstairs all the way up here. Maybe the people on this floor didn't know there was a prisoner loose. Maybe the people on this floor didn't even know there were prisoners in the building at all. That was a chilling thought. I peeked up over the edge of my cubicle. There was a woman in the next cubicle with her back to me, typing away at her computer with headphones on. One whole wall of her cubicle was filled with pictures of a black and brown dog, a German shepherd maybe, on hikes, at the lake, on the couch. This lady loved her dog. The cubicles stretched out across the room, interrupted every now and then by big white pillars. I saw somebody stand up in one of the cubicles, a man, and I ducked instinctively. He went the other direction, though, and I watched him walk to a copier on the far